The opinions of the Mixed Babble podcast is the opinions of the hosts and the guests alone. We are not medical professionals. If you need medical advice, please speak with your doctor or a medical professional for guidance and treatment. Listener's discretion is advised. Explicit language and topics may be covered and used. Thank you. Hi guys, welcome to Mixed Babble. My name is Joni Brown. I am in the middle of the end of the world. What are you guys up to? Everything from the day-to-day bullshit, positive quotes that inspire me, books that I'm currently into, music that I'm obsessed with, or just whatever comes to mind. Let's get into it. Hey, hey guys. Welcome back to Mixed Babble. I am your host, Joni Brown. I actually have someone in the podcast office with me today. I've been teasing this for about 5 episodes, and I finally was able to wrangle my husband to be a part of the podcast today. Nate, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here, finally.
I think people were starting to believe that you didn't exist because you were making me look bad.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry for catching COVID?
Yes, I am.
So you just finally, after 6 tests, got your negative test results so that you could actually start reintegrating yourself back into society. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel awesome. I still have some of the, lingering effects because I am asthmatic, so even though I'm now testing negative, it still did a little something to my lungs. So still got a little bit of a cough that I'll probably have for a while and some occasional chest tightness. But other than that, living life and just happy to be out of that room.
So you pretty much was like, you know, other than, you know, I'm still having all these issues and I'm kind of, you know, sort of dying. Everything's great.
Yes, that's exactly how it is.
So I guess it's safe to say, fair warning, I'm hoping that you can keep your lungs and your coughs under control while we're recording this, but they may come.
I'm currently repressing a cough, like, as we speak.
Oh my gosh. Are you going to be okay? You need some water?
I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be good.
You just might turn purple. Yeah. Well, I'm happy that you are back in the rest of the house, because it was definitely a weird time for 4 weeks. The bedroom was looking a little rough that you were in.
Yeah, started to look a little rough to me as well.
But I am so happy that you're here. So we can actually, you know, get into the discussion today. There were quite a few things that I wanted for us to discuss. You know, with the climate currently right now, with racism and whatnot. I talked about my fertility journey briefly, that we were going to discuss that. But with everything happening right now, I think it's a lot and too much to tackle all in one episode. So we're going to break this up over a series of episodes. But today, the reason why I've opted to discuss the fertility journey is because we are back in the fold of doing that. We had actually started doing that a month ago. And the week we started, you tested positive for COVID. So that put everything on hold.
COVID-19, the gift that keeps giving.
And it's not to blame you for that, because obviously, you know, we can't really control that too much. But it really is one of those things with 2020. There really is no control right now. And even though we've been on this fertility journey technically since 2015, this is our first time actually seeing a specialist and trying to get things really moving in the right direction now. But then again, the coronavirus happened and put a halt to all of that. So mid-June, we started the process, and then you got sick, so we had to put everything on hold, as I mentioned, and now we're back in the mix of starting that back up again.
which last month I ended up having to do some blood work. And, you know, whatever they found with that, I ended up having to do the measles MMR booster shot. So I don't recall doing that when I was a kid. And probably for the best, because my arm is kind of swollen right now. I guess that's one of the reactions to getting that test as an adult, or that shot rather, the immunization as an adult. But we have both procedures, I guess, if you will, on Monday. So I wanted to talk about that because that's coming up in 2 days. Again, we're recording on Saturday and this will go up on Thursday. So it will be your Monday in the past by the time you listen to this. So just to kind of rewind, we had our first miscarriage back in the summer, spring, summer of 2015. And we found at that time that when we went in to, I guess, listen to the heartbeat and see the baby for the first time on the monitor at 10 weeks, there was no heartbeat. The doctor struggled to find what she was looking for, couldn't see it. They sent me to another room that had a more sensitive, ultrasound monitor, and they still weren't able to locate anything. And eventually they advised that it was a blighted ovum. So that means that I guess in layman's terms, that the baby didn't grow. It was just a ball sack, if you will. It didn't have any features like a child or fetus or anything like that. So that made us, you know, try to put it in a perspective. It was easier to digest that way because it didn't look like a child. But I know that that was devastating for us because that just was not something that we thought was a possibility to happen. But I want to give you the floor so that you can kind of tell me what was going through your mind at that time when that happened, because it is so easy for the woman to be, you know, the focal point in a miscarriage, an infertility process. And I wanted you to be able to talk about your male perspective and what that's been like for you.
From my perspective, it was a tough time for me because, for a lot of reasons. I guess the first reason would be you go from feelings of excitement and joy to, like, where do we go from here? And before we were at the 10, was it 10 weeks?
Yes.
Before we made it to the 10-week mark, I had already told family members, friends, coworkers, and untelling people is just a really tough thing that was really tough. And from a male perspective, I guess the first thing that I have to get out of the way is obviously I'm affected by it, but it was difficult for me because I was definitely more trying to be more in tune and aware of your emotions. And for a while, I kind of, I guess, was really kind of numb to it and was just trying to concern myself with making sure that you were good. And even once I got to the point to where I was like, okay, maybe I should reach out to someone. I didn't have any friends who had ever gone through something like this. I talked to my dad about it, and my dad was like, I didn't even know that was a thing. So there were no other males that I know personally that had ever been through something like this. But when you look at the statistics, it's something that happens all the time, but it's something that people just don't talk about or like pretend like it doesn't happen. So that was the most difficult part, is kind of not having anyone really to lean on and talk to about it. And I really didn't want to talk to you about it unless it was something that you brought up, because I didn't want to bring up, you know, feelings or emotions, are make things more difficult for you.
Yeah. So it's funny that you said the part about telling people. And I remember when we first found out, because it wasn't planned. It wasn't a planned pregnancy, but at that point we had already been together like 5 years or something like that. 5 years at the time when we got pregnant. And I remember us saying like, we're not going to tell anybody, but then we were so excited. We started telling people almost immediately. It was actually kind of funny, yeah, because we agreed not to tell anybody. And then I went and told someone. And by the time you and I reconvened, we were like, yeah, so I told somebody, and you're like, yeah, I told somebody too. Yeah. So absolutely, the untelling was really difficult, because it's awkward and you almost feel in some way like you were a failure, like you did something to have that happen. And what's also interesting about what you said is the more I spoke to people about it, the more I found that everyone had their own story. And that was what was so interesting, is the fact that no one really talks about it, but a lot of people have gone through it. You know, my paternal grandmother had 13 kids. And in between that, she had miscarriages. It happens, just no one ever talks about it. And I had an older friend who has grown kids that she had miscarriages as well. And also, not to get ahead of myself, but with the story, but she told me about her DNCs. And it was something that I had never even heard about until the doctor gave it to us as an option on, you know, how to handle the miscarriage. So after we found out at this first and only doctor's appointment for the first pregnancy that there was no way of, saving the pregnancy, the two options were you can take a pill and you can miscarry at home, but then it could be, you know, it could be very painful and you'd end up having to go to the hospital and have surgery anyway, or you can opt for the DNC surgery and it will be, you know, scheduled, you'll know what to expect, you'll go to sleep, they'll do the procedure about 30 minutes to an hour, you'll wake up and that'll be that. So the surgery outright seemed like the better of the two options, because I would prefer to not be in pain and still have to go to the hospital anyway. So that's what we opted for. We were in the midst of planning our wedding and getting married at the time. We had just gotten engaged that December, found out we were pregnant end of February, beginning of March. And so everything was moving so quickly. And it was funny because the day that we went to our doctor's appointment, we were like, we're going to make a day of it. We're going to go and hear the heartbeat, get the ultrasound picture, and then we were going to go and pick out our wedding rings. And I remember after we heard the news at the doctor, the rest of the day was shot. We were just like, you know what? We're not in the mood to go and look at anything. So I just remember us going to lunch, and I remember being like, I need a drink. Now I know I can drink. I'm not pregnant anymore. I need a drink, which was a very awkward drink because you're still technically pregnant, but they're telling you you're not. So, having to untell people, I mean, that's obviously a personal choice, but I just remember saying to you, you know, next pregnancy, we're not going to do that. We're not going to tell people right away. That was a mistake that we made, and we decided that we weren't going to do that again. Yeah. So
I think that brings up even more things, because now, you know, I just can imagine, you know, when we finally get pregnant again, I have this gigantic thing that I'm really excited about. And, you know, other than you, all of the people that I'm around that I love and care about, and I know there's a lot of other people that love and care about us that want to see this happen for us, And it's kind of like, I don't want to tell you because I don't want to have to untell you. So,
well, we've also made that joke that I'm probably going to be like 9 months pregnant, and they people going to be like, are you pregnant? And I'm going to be like, nope, I had Chipotle today. Like, yeah. I'm still going to tell them no, because I just, at this point, we've had quite a few, but not to get ahead of ourselves. So fast forward, we do the surgery, and that was difficult because, again, you go to sleep pregnant and then you wake up and you're no longer pregnant. And that was actually like my first official real surgery, other than, you know, getting my wisdom teeth out. I had never had surgery before. How was that for you that day?
It was really tough. One, just knowing that, you know, it was like surgery, and they were going to put you out, and it would have been kind of, you know, stacking things on top of one another. If, you know, something would have happened to you after that, that would have put me in a really weird spot. So I just remember praying that, you know, you come out of this A-okay, and eventually we'll get to a point to where, you know, we'll be able to try again.
I know the surgery for me was scary because I know doctors are skilled in doing what they do, but there's always that risk of having an overly aggressive doctor, because they're essentially, you know, cleaning everything out and can cause scar tissue, which then could affect future pregnancies. So that was also a fear of mine. As you know, I hate needles, and we had to go at the butt crack of dawn that day. It was like 5 a.m. that we had to be at the surgery center, and being wheeled in there, it was definitely scary. It was definitely scary, and I couldn't help but think in the back of my mind, even just a little bit, like, how are they sure that there's nothing there? Like, what if there really was something? You know what I mean? Just like, are they sure that there's no baby? Are they sure that they saw and heard what they think they did? So that was always, you know, a fear of mine, that maybe they got it wrong. So we did the surgery. I woke up. The surgery went well. And then we were on to heal from there. So fast forward to 2017, and we decide that we are now married, because we got married in 2016. We're now married, and we are going to try again. And this time, the doctor, because now after what had happened with the first one, it was the same doctor, and she said, you know, what we're going to do this time, we're going to test your blood every 2 days, because your blood, your hormones, the pregnancy hormone, is supposed to double every 48 hours. So as a person that hates needles, I then had to do blood work every 2 days, so they could monitor the increase in my hormone levels. So I was tracking that as well, and the hormones this time never really increased in the beginning, and by, I would say, it was very early. We never made it to 10 weeks.
But this is what pissed me off about the lab that was doing the blood test. They were simply taking the blood test, so of course they could see the results, and they had you continue to come back. And I can't remember exactly what your levels were, but by the time you had taken like maybe like 5 blood tests,
yeah,
and the numbers were not doubling, like after the second one. So it was, yeah, like you did 3 more blood tests when they knew, yeah, then, but didn't say anything.
So my hormone levels, I don't think they ever made it past like 1200. And I know most people don't know what that means. To put it in perspective, with the first pregnancy at 10 weeks, my hormone level was over 90,000. So with the second pregnancy, I never made it past like 1200. So, and what happens is when you're giving blood, if you're miscarrying, sometimes that number starts to then go down. And that's what started to happen was my numbers, it peaked at around 1200 and then started to decrease thereafter. So they knew that I was miscarrying, but as he said, continue to have me do blood work. So that second pregnancy that was planned ended up miscarrying naturally because I was decreasing hormones rapidly to where my body recognized that something was wrong and it miscarried on its own. So then the third one was last year, 2019, around the same time, last summer, last June, we ended up finding out that we were miscarrying yet again. And it was very similar to the first one, except there was no, there was nothing, right? There was nothing to see.
Yeah.
And I know I'm talking a lot right now because I'm the one who kind of remembers the details. So I'm going to have you jump in here with the more your perspective, but just giving the background on what was going on at the time. So last summer, June, I was miscarrying again and I ended up having to have a second DNC. Did that bring up any feelings that you had from the first one, or did you, were you better prepared for this one?
It brought up a lot of feelings because, correct me if I'm mistaken, but I think we were in like the same room, the same ultrasound room as the first one. So as soon as we went in there to kind of be able to do the ultrasound and see if there was something that was growing, I don't know. I just,
you're having PTSD.
Yeah, it was PTSD all over again. So,
well, you know what? It's funny that you say that because what they do is they have us in a main room, and when there's a problem, they send you to another side of the building. And that side of the building was the exact same side that they sent us to with the first one, which that the reason that that is hard in of itself is because the second room that they send you to has newborn baby portraits all over the waiting room wall. Yeah. So you're sitting there and you're looking at these beautiful pictures of babies in their bassinets on the beach with the sunset in the background, and you're, it's like they're staring at you, almost mocking you. And then they have you come in to use the more high-tech equipment to see if they can pick anything up. So I think you may have been right with that.
Yeah.
It was almost like I became numb to it, I feel, because it was almost like, okay, you know, I was expecting this again. You start to get the expectation, which is a sad expectation to have. But, you know, we've talked about the difference between our journey and other people's journey, because, you know, I've known people that have had positive pregnancy tests, and as soon as they get that, they're announcing it on Facebook.
Yeah.
And or telling people. And I'm like, we can never have that. We can never do that. We will never feel confident enough to do that.
Or even a baby shower, for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about that, you know, doing a baby shower. We've said that we may not even have one till the baby's actually physically here. I don't know how many people have baby showers with the baby there, but that might be our centerpiece because, you know, and then you have COVID right now. None of this might be even a thing because of the coronavirus, which I've also thought about. I've actually thought about the fact that in that sense, for us, the coronavirus might be a blessing, because then that could be our excuse why we're not doing a baby shower and we don't feel as left out in the celebration process like a quote unquote normal, you know, family having the normal process of announcements and whatnot. I know it's really easy to forget about the man or the partner or, you know, the spouse in a situation like this. So I really wanted your perspective on what that was like for you. And what does that mean for you with regard to the future and us starting this fertility specialist journey?
Well, of course, I'm excited about starting our fertility specialist journey. But I also understand that there's things about this that I'll never understand. You know, as much as I want a child with you, there's things that, you know, for me, it's, you know, feelings and being able to be supportive. But from your aspect, you're actually putting your body on the line. And that's the part that I know, you know, I'll never be able to feel that. And as far as, you know, me personally, I just try my best to be, you know, as supportive of you and try to be your biggest fan and cheer you on and let you know that I'm here for support and whatever I can do. And also just let you know how thankful I am that you're willing to put your body on the line and everything else so that we can have a family. You know, I know that that's a sacrifice, and not just it's almost the ultimate sacrifice, you know. And it's something that, as much as I want a family, that's the part that I can't do. So it's almost kind of like you're sitting on the sidelines, like, I wish I, you know, could be a part of the game, you know. And sometimes I wish that we were seahorses, you know. I definitely
you'd carry the baby.
I definitely carry the baby if I could.
You know, it's funny, and I appreciate you saying that, because as sad as it is for me to say or even to admit, I did find myself at some points being like, you're not giving anything up. I'm the one that's giving blood every 2 days. And I also had to do that with the third pregnancy. I had to immediately start giving blood the day that I got a positive pregnancy test. Every 2 days, once I got that positive, I had to be giving blood. And sometimes the blood giving was for 3 weeks straight. Like, I would have to leave work on my lunch break to give blood and go back to work. So I think that's why I'm glad that we have such a strong relationship, because I can see where that strain comes into other relationships, because it would have been easy for me to kind of resent you a little bit, because in essence, yes, you're going through it emotionally, but physically, you're not going through it, yeah. You know, and so that was the part where I feel like I would sometimes find myself getting upset. Like, yeah, it's easy for you to say, let's try again. Because there were times where you're like, you want to start trying again? And I'm like, you know what comes with that every time you say you want to start trying again. Because that means as soon as I get that positive, I'm going to be giving blood every 2 days. I'm going to potentially have to miscarry at home or DNC or whatever the situation is. And I'm not sure. Did I say on the third one I had to do DNC again? Did I say that?
I don't think you did.
Yeah. So on the third miscarriage, I had to do a second DNC. So I've had two DNCs and I've miscarried naturally at home. So that's a total of 3 miscarriages. And right now, again, we're on our 4th attempt. So, you know, the getting pregnant isn't the issue. It's the retaining of the pregnancy that we're working on trying to figure out, which is a blessing in and of itself, because I know like IVF and whatnot is extremely expensive. And that's typically the struggles for those individuals that have to go through IVF, is the getting pregnant and the, you know, eggs not being released on time and whatnot or at all. But I definitely appreciate you saying that, because I did find myself at times kind of being resentful. Like, you, it's easy for you to ask me, let's start, do you want to start again? And you're not you're not giving anything up every time we start that journey. So I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. Thank you.
So now with this new step that we're taking, on Monday, you'll be doing blood work to test chromosomes.
Yes.
And making sure that you're good on that end. I already told you guys I had my measles shot. My arm is red and swollen and kind of bruised and itchy. All the things, which sucks, but whatever. Again, that's what we have to go through in order to get to the end goal. Yeah. And on Monday, I also have my HSG test, also known as the dye test. So that should be an interesting experience. That was actually scheduled the week after you found out that... No, it was the week you found out you had the coronavirus.
Yep.
And they said, don't fucking come to our office. Don't come up in here with that bullshit. So all those had to be canceled. So now that we are starting this process, are you ready for that?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready.
You've been ready.
I've been ready.
I don't know if I am. Because I have to do the dye test on Monday. I have to do I did the measles shot. So that means in 30 days, I have to get tested again with blood to see if the measles shot even took, if for lack of better medical terminology. And we're in the very beginning stages of this fertility process. I don't even know what it's really going to entail or what it's really going to cost. And that's the fear is, you know, they actually had to sign paperwork that said if anything happens with COVID and everything has to stop, like you have to start over essentially. If you're doing like IVF treatments and whatnot, if we ever end up having to do that, your treatments could stop. So don't get that shit again.
Trust me, I am not trying to get COVID again.
I hear you over there like really trying not to cough. Are you going to be all right?
Holding them in.
Oh, man. But I appreciate you coming on the podcast to talk about that. We can kind of switch gears because I know that, you know, we just wanted to update everybody on how that's been for us. But we can switch gears and move on to something else. So we know, you know, a few people, I've talked about it on previous episodes, that we know people that are getting married, and whether they just got married a couple months ago, just got married this week, just, you know, are getting married in a couple months from now. They had to postpone their weddings due to COVID and all that. Is there anything that you would give as advice to newlyweds?
My best advice that I would give to newlyweds is to understand that No one outside of your relationship understands your relationship in all of its totality. So if you ever are having an issue in your relationship, other than, you know, domestic violence or anything like that, the best way to handle it is talking to your partner. If I have an issue with something that Joni is doing, I could vent to other people about what my issue is, but that's never going to resolve that issue. And a lot of times you might be in a relationship where there's an issue with your partner and you never even know about it. Like, I didn't even know that was a really big deal. So if you ever have a issue with your partner, the first person you need to address it with is your partner, because that's the only person that could fix it. And when you're venting to other people or talking to people outside of your relationship, two things can happen. One, they'll give you some advice on things that they would do, and they're not in your relationship. And the second thing is sometimes things happen in relationships and the two people in that relationship can find it within themselves to forgive each other. But that person that you're talking to outside of the relationship, they don't forgive that person. So now it changes the dynamic between your friend and the person that's in your relationship. So just kind of my biggest advice would be just to build a wall around your relationship and
protect it. Yeah, it's funny that you say that. And that is a very, very good point, because you eventually forgive your spouse, but then everyone else that you've told, they will never forget what you told them. And they will hold that against that person because they haven't yet forgiven them, as you said.
Yep.
So, you know, I think you've lucked out for obvious reasons, but I think... But I think you've lucked out, because one of the things you've said about me is the way I differ is you never have to guess what's on my mind or how I feel about something. So I think you've been spoiled in that way, where I'm very transparent with how I feel about anything, any situation.
Yes, very.
I don't know if I like your tone. So what would you say, what advice would you have given yourself? Would you have given that same advice to yourself in the beginning? Or
I knew that going in. I already knew what I was getting into.
Yeah, I did say that on the previous episodes.
Yeah. And the best advice that I've ever been given was by a older gentleman who's been married for, I think, close to 40 years. And I think what I asked him is, you know, like, how do you do, you know, 40 years? And he said, it's not like 40 years in total. He said, it's one day at a time. So you just have to get your wife to renew your contract every day. And every time I see this guy, he goes, did she renew your contract? And I say, yeah, yeah. She renewed my contract.
I needed to read the fine print. That's fun. That's great advice. It's always good to get advice from people that are in it. And to kind of piggyback off of what you were saying, it is important that when you seek advice, that you're not getting advice from people that have never had long, successful relationships. If you're seeking advice from your single friends, and not saying that your single friends can't have good advice, but if your single friend is always having bad breakups or, you know, messy drama in their life, they might not be the best one to get advice from.
Yeah.
Just something to think about. Consider the source. And in addition to that, even though you may think that person is your friend, they may not want to, you know, see you happy because they're not happy. If they're not in a relationship, they want you to be single too, so you guys can go to the club and turn up.
Yep. Misery does love company.
That's pretty much been the theme the last few episodes.
Yep. Also, with any type of advice, you got to eat the chicken and spit out the bones. You know, there could be people who are in, you know, 80-year relationships and give you some bad advice that doesn't apply to your relationship. So whenever anybody gives you advice on anything, take the things that apply to you and the things that don't apply to you, get rid of them. You know, it's advice. You don't have to take it.
So one of the things, since we're on theme right now with marriage and love and all that fun stuff, I mentioned in a previous episode that I would touch on weddings and what comes with weddings. So I know, deep breaths. Why didn't we bring a little alcohol for this one? But so when we were getting married in 2016, we had a small wedding. It was a little bit unorthodox. We kept some things that were important to us, like the dress and the guests and whatnot, but it was small on the, you know, people that we selected to come because we were paying for it ourselves. And so, and it was important that the focal point was love and not just, you know, a big party. So you want to say something?
Yeah. Can we backtrack on how we got to that point?
I don't know where you're going with that. So take the mic.
All right. So, the Monday after I proposed to you, when I got home, you had a PowerPoint presentation.
I did.
Hooked up to the TV.
I did.
With how the wedding was going to go. And I think you even had the guest list as well.
I may have. I'm organized. What can I say? For the most part. Just not with the podcast.
Yeah. So our original guest list was like 150 people. And the more we kind of got into it and, you know, we're looking at the money and pretty much we, for the most part, paid for our own wedding.
Yeah.
By the time things got down to it, we had chopped the guest list down to about 40 people.
Yeah, 40, 50. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about 40, 50 people. I don't know, just going through the process, I think it really helped prepare us for our relationship and kind of the advice that I was telling you about earlier, how you could just kind of got to buckle down and do that, you know, me and you against the world type of thing.
Absolutely.
And get everybody else's opinions out, because the thing about our wedding is there were so many people that had opinions as to how it should go, and everything from what, like, dress rehearsals to what they were gonna wear and things mm-hmm. like that,
and when they were gonna even come to get fitted.
Yeah.
So now I know you know where I'm going with this. Uh-huh. I know you know where I'm going with this, because our wedding story is not complete unless we mention there were some very strange requests that were made throughout the process of us getting married.
Oh, boy.
And I remember you coming home one day, and I was in bed watching TV, and you walk into the room and you said... Well, first, you had this weird, awkward smile on your face, almost like a nervous smile. Like, I'm about to ask you something. Don't lose your mind. So you walk into the room and you're like, okay. So I mute the TV and I'm looking at you and you're like, all right. So I had dinner with my dad today and he, you know, was talking about, we were talking about the wedding and everything. And I told him that we had gone out and we had picked the cake, the flavors. We did our taste test, and we picked all that out. And so he, you know, asked where we went to get the cake made or who was making the cake and whatnot. And we told him, or I told him, this is you speaking. And then you said to me, so then he asked if, you know, he offered to pay for the cake if
he had already paid for the cake. He offered to pay for our honeymoon.
I thought he offered to pay for the cake if we would allow him to come with us on our honeymoon.
No, he offered to pay for the honeymoon if he was allowed to come. Now, I know that sounds weird.
Yeah, you're not really making this any better, so I'm like, that, what are you saying?
Not saying that it's not weird. I get that it's weird, but I was trying to get a free honeymoon out of this thing.
With your dad and me.
It was going to be like a cruise or something, so it wasn't going to be like we're sharing a room.
I don't know, because at this point, the tone and the fact that it was even asked, I need the specifications on what you're asking. Because I don't know what exactly you're saying. Because I Googled that shit and it is not a thing. And it was in that moment where I was like, what the fuck am I marrying into?
Yep.
And you're giggling, but like you're like, just hear me out. And I'm like, hear you out? Are you like what? So I'm sitting here like, what did you tell him? What was your response? I need to know exactly what you said to him. And you're like, well, I told him I wasn't really thinking that was the best idea because, with it being our honeymoon, we would probably want to be alone. And then you said he said that he did something similar when he was getting married. And I was like, yeah, so about that. So then, as you're telling me this, I'm sitting here like, okay, so what was the final answer to him, Nate? And you're like, well, he said, just mull it over, just think about it. I was like, so you left that dinner with a, I'll think about it?
Trying to get that free honeymoon.
Clearly, you were trying to get a free dinner too.
Yes, I like free.
My God. Yeah. So I was like, I can't, I don't, I really legit was thinking like, can this marriage work? Because who does that?
Like free stuff. I don't know how to tell you.
I don't like free
free
stuff
stuff
that
is
much.
good. Free stuff is good.
With your dad on your honeymoon?
It wasn't not in the same room.
We don't know that. We don't know what the specifications were. So when I
And
tell
what?
you guys that we've been through the marriage ups and downs and sideways, that's just the tip of the shit that we've had to deal with.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate you coming on here today. I wanted to talk to you about the climate, but I just wanted to do a little different. Not that this episode was much lighter, because yes, we're talking about miscarriages and whatnot, but I think it's an important conversation to have. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are going through it and can relate to some of our stories. Maybe not all of them, because I really hope that no one else has had someone ask to come with them on their honeymoon. But
Oh boy.
I know the miscarriage portion is something that a lot of people go through. You're not alone. I'm hoping that one day we will have our rainbow baby story. And that's something that I will, love to share on here at some point. So I just want to keep you guys abreast of that situation so that you can be on our journey with us and just know that, it does get better. I'm still going through the treatments, and make sure that if you are going through something like this, you are speaking with your partner, your spouse, your husband, your wife, and especially a therapist, because that's ideal in a situation like this to help you get through that. It's not easy. Do your research, and if you go online, there's a lot of communities of people that are, have gone through it, are going through it. And I know even for me, one of the things that I found out with some of the tests that they had ran, I do have an MTHFR gene mutation, which essentially means that my body does not absorb folic acid the way that it should. So I've had to switch to methylfolate so that my body doesn't have to convert anything and that it absorbs it, in its natural state. So that's just, something that I've had to do. I don't know if that's going to help anyone with regards to that, but that's what one of the things that I've had to do. And it's not harmful in any ways. It's still folate. It's just the natural, more natural form where your body doesn't have to convert it. But again, as always, speak to your doctor and general practitioner or gynecologist and all those people that actually went to school for this. But thank you, Nate, for joining me today. We will have some other conversations in the future.
Definitely.
I just definitely wanted to talk about this with you today because I know you were in the right mind frame. It is really one of those conversations that you have to be in the right mind frame to have.
Definitely.
All right. So thank you for joining us,
guys. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We'll do more in the future. Bye.